Monster Energy. Everybody knows White Monster, Zero Ultra. That's the OG. It kicked off this whole zero sugar energy drink thing. But Ultra is a whole lineup now. You've got Strawberry Dreams, Blue Hawaiian, Sunrise, and Vice Guava. And they all bring the Monster Energy punch. So if you've been living in the white can, branch out. Ultra's got a flavor for every vibe. And every single one is zero sugar. Tap the banner to learn more.
Fans and listeners, we are back. It is Inside Boxing Live. It is Dan Canobio. It is Chris Algieri. It is presented by PPV.com. Dan Canobio coming to you from an undisclosed location. Chris Algieri coming to you from Las Vegas, Nevada, fresh off the call. International feed, ESPN. Nailah Inoue defeating TJ Doheny, seventh round TKO. Doheny had a spinal injury, leg. Spinal. His back is broken.
Spinal.
Chris, how you feeling? Take us through the last couple hours of your life calling the fights at God knows what hour that was, Vegas time.
Yeah, I'm good. Notice the sunglasses. These are going to stay on throughout the show tonight. So the Japanese cards are notoriously long. There was four 12-rounders, one 10-rounder, and they do not adjust the time schedule. So it's every hour. Like clockwork. If it's a first round knockout, cool, you fill for 45 minutes. So the cards are very long. So I started at 11:30 p.m. Vegas time.
Good God.
Which was Monday night, Labor Day night. And then called until I think we got done at 5:15 a.m. Tuesday morning, Vegas time.
Where do they have you set up out there in Vegas?
We're in a studio. And it's a nice studio. It's fine. You know, we're sitting at a desk.
Is it overlooking anything cool, or is it just your typical studio?
No, typical studio, first floor. It's the same one that we always use. The whole top rank crew is there as usual. It's nice. There's snacks. There's coffee. You know,
coffee.
We're Poncher and I are in there, one eye open.
Snacks are everything. Looking forward to
snacks are big.
Looking forward to a snack, eating a snack in between rounds.
Yep.
Thinking about coffee, just having something out there that can distract you to get through. Not that it's a strenuous job. You're calling fights. It's the dream job, to be honest. But
absolutely,
it's still a job.
But still, it's still a job, and it's still four in the morning, and you're calling, you know, fights and saying very difficult names over and over and over again. But I was starting to have a little lull.
Around what time was that?
That was around 4:15 a.m.
I was in my second. Sleep.
It was before that. It was around 3:45 because we were still in the Takai fight. And the Takai fight was excellent. But I was in between rounds, I was getting those droopy eyes. You know what saved me?
Cocaine.
Fruit snacks. Oh, I wish. I asked for crystal meth, but it's Vegas, fentanyl, you know, I don't know. Yeah. So fruit snacks. That was they had some animal shaped fruit snacks that were available. So a little sugar rush, boom, came back to life for the monster. The monster's return.
Yeah, then the main event comes, and then you're all jazzed up. You know,
jazzed up.
I wish he had the guy with the guitar leading him into the ring. That usually gets me going in the morning, but it wasn't. It felt like like the vibe in the arena felt like the type of fight that it was. It wasn't like a huge Inoue fight. It was like the first non-sellout that he's had in years. He thanked the fans for coming afterwards and said on a rainy Tuesday night in Tokyo. So he kind of like set the mood there. So it wasn't like your typical, like, you know, buzzing arena. Not that it ever is with the way that the Japanese fans are, where they clap, you know, after the round ends. And when the fight came to a close in the seventh round, which we'll talk about, very anticlimactic ending where it's just like, all right, I guess the fight's over.
Even Inoue looked like,
Inoue puts his robe on and it's like, all right, I guess I'll just go back to bed like the rest of you guys. It was very anticlimactic. So we will get to that entire fight. This episode is brought to you by PPV.com. Every episode is brought to you by PPV.com. We're getting closer to Canelo versus Berlanga. That's the next big offering on PPV.com. Stream it to your phone, tablet, any device, including a big screen TV. If you're having a watch party, the coolest thing about PPV.com is their live interactive chat. While you're watching the fight, on the right side will be me, Chris, Jim Lampley, Lance Pugmire, and you, the fans at home, can interact with us, ask us questions during the fight. So we're looking forward to that. We're heading out to Vegas. Chris, you might as well stay there. I'm heading out to Vegas next week. Chris is heading back to Vegas next week, which is a scary, scary thought when you're already in Vegas and you think about when you're heading back there. But PPV sends us to these fights. That's how we do this episode twice a week. That's how we do everything. So go ahead and order Canelo Berlanga through us at PPV.com. Are you ready for that, Chris?
Guys, first of all, if you're watching these fights any other way besides PPV.com, you're late to the party. Like, there's no better way to enjoy fights. It's a party, man. It's a party. I mean, you get to interact with us like live during the fight. Like, that's crazy. No one offers that. So, but aside from that, just like it's always talk about, the stream's great. There's no subscription, which is huge. But and also they provide you guys with us, so we got got boots on the floor access. I would stay, Dan. You know, it's not a bad idea. But I have ProBox TV next week, and we got fights in Tampa, so I have to go home.
You do. ProBox TV is killing
this
it.
Man doesn't sleep.
No, it doesn't sleep. Just the thought of it work. Making me tired, making me
sleeping
exhausted.
Sleeping,
just
I'm dead.
Thinking about it. Yeah, exactly. It's PPV.com. Next week, we'll be in Vegas doing a lot of content. We're doing some live shows on Thursday from Radio Row, doing a live show Friday after the weigh-in. You know I'll be interviewing Canelo. You know I'll be interviewing all the fighters. You know we'll be bringing you all sorts of content all week long.
We'll be eating at Barry's Steakhouse.
Yes, I just talked to not Barry himself, but the owner of Barry's. To get our table set up and make sure that meat is nice and fresh. Pause.
Fresh.
Let's get into it. Yeah.
Dan's got jokes from the early morning. Get it?
No, well, it's 1:40 where I am here.
Well, I mean, you've been up all morning, though.
I did catch an hour of sleep after we decided not to do the podcast directly after the show. We decided to wait
a few
hours.
That, Dan. I need some rest.
I wanted you at like I know you're not going to be at 100%, but I wanted you at like at least, you look like you're at like 69, 71%.
Yeah, we're at 70, I would say. That's probably 70% of Algeria. I'm about
that's
there.
Perfect. 70% of Algeria can beat 100% of most men out there in this country. So I'll take that version of Chris Algeria. Let's get into it, Chris. Nyoa Inoue, seventh round stoppage. Another stoppage for the man. All he does is stop his opponents. A little more deliberate, a little more cautious early on. I don't know if he was thinking of the Neary fight. I don't know if he's adapting a new style as he gets a little bit up there in age on the north side of 30. Came out throwing 15 punches in the first round, upped it up in the second round. A little more cautious. Is it because of Doheny, the fact that he would look huge in there and he does have power? But at the end of the day, Inoue gets another stoppage. Seventh round TKO. He lands 31 of his 93 punches were body shots. That was a big
wow.
component of this fight, was the body punching of Inoue. It ultimately broke something in Doheny's body, whether it was his body or his will. Something broke in Doheny, and the fight was called in the seventh round. And the Inoue train rolls on.
Yeah. So speaking about Inoue and quote-unquote his hesitancy early on, number one, definitely thinking about the Neary fight. If you saw him warm up in the back, he kept touching his cheekbone with that rear hand, that right hand, high. Because that was the sweeping left hook that caught him, right? And he's fighting another southpaw. If you think about it, Doheny is a southpaw with a big left hand, especially that overhand left. He's got a killer overhand left. And that's exactly the punch I dropped him in the last fight. And I saw the adaption from the last fight. That's the most impressive thing to me about Inoue at this stage of his career, his ability to keep getting better. He's still working on things, and he was working on keeping that hand up, not picking his head up way up in the air when he throws the jab, which he does at times. And I saw the adjustments, definitely being way more deliberate, because Doheny was huge. I saw on Twitter that he walked in the ring about 145 pounds, 122 to 145, and he looked it. He looked big. And at this point of Inoue's career at bantamweight, he is going to be outsized by everybody he fights. He is not the same size as these guys anymore. Neary was bigger. Doheny's bigger. We'll see. Even Nakatani, who's a smaller guy fighting at 118, when he was up, he might be bigger than Inoue come fight night. Definitely taller, definitely longer. And he's young, too, and he's going to fill in. So by the time they do fight, if they are to fight, he actually may be the bigger man. So Inoue is now fighting at a disadvantage in terms of size. But other than that, he looked awesome. He was very sharp, very deliberate, and it looked like he was analyzing data. He was taking in the data points, collecting. And then I think it was around 4 where it seemed like, okay, I got this guy figured out. He started coming forward, started putting punches together. The body attack was very smart because that's all Doheny was giving him early on. But as he built off that, you start to see Doheny's face get all lumped up and beat up and bleeding from the nose, cut over the nose. The body shots, though, oof, they were brutal. Straight right hands, left hooks to the liver. At the end, did you see that bruise on Doheny's rib? He had a like one rib that just
was over. Or I know in the sixth round, he was getting beat pillar to post.
I think it was actually from the sixth round, but you could. I really caught an eye where I could see it. After the fight was stopped, I saw him. You know, when he's leaning and trying to grab his back, you could see his rib. Like one of his ribs just looked like a black. Like it was black and blue. Almost like a marker. But it was a bruise. And it was one of his like ribs right there.
That man's insides were screaming. That man's insides were tapping. He was taking just punishment. And then he posted a video or his manager, Sean Gibbons, posted a video where his leg just gave. Have you ever seen something like that? His leg gave out and started from his back on down, where it is because of body shots. Like the sixth round is when Inoue really started teeing off to the body. And that's when Doheny, towards the end of that round, could see him kind of just going back to his corner very gingerly. And then the start of the seventh, you know, could barely even walk, almost went down to his knees. Like, so that was a strange ending. But well, if you think
about
it,
you got to think about it. Math, I think people forget that your ribs are connected to your spine. They go all the way around. Yeah. So, and getting hit in that, you know, in those ribs, and they're connecting the spine, they connect the front as well. But some of those floating, quote unquote, floating ribs, which are a little lower, are pretty much only connected in the back, and it's just soft tissue that connects them to the, you know, to the rib or to other ribs or to the sternum. So you keep hitting that side, and those things are moving and adjusting. You're tweaking your back. You get that sciatica shooting down your leg, and your leg goes numb the way apparently it did. I mean, I don't know physiologically how that works, but it rationally, it does make sense.
Yeah, no, if you just think about it, you just look at the body. Everyone on Twitter who thinks they're doctors, everyone turns into a specific expert in what they're watching on Twitter. And every
Twitter physicians,
Twitter everything. If there's a big story in the world, it's not just sports. Everyone on Twitter becomes an expert in that specific category and field. In the boxing world, everyone was a doctor, and they're like, "Oh yeah, it makes sense. He just got hammered to the body, and now he can't walk. His back is broken, spinal leg."
Did you hear Tim his call? He goes, "Yeah." He's like, "A guy got hit in his stomach and dislocated his back."
That's dying. What Inoue will do to a man. That's what Inoue will do. Yeah, Tim Bradley. This is why I like Tim Bradley. I know there's some people
out hilarious.
There they have like, you know, he's very controversial. He's not for everyone. I love him, but he will just say what's on his mind.
Yes.
He would just literally say anything that's on his mind, whether it's very inflammatory towards a fighter, whether it's just that, something like that. Like a guy sitting on a bar stool watching a fight, and that's very, very – I love that about Bradley. Yeah, he was hilarious early morning. He was definitely feeling a little loopy, the broadcast, because he was like, yeah, he punched him in the stomach, and now his back is broken. That's what Inoue Inoue will freaking do to him, man. But Chris, you're absolutely right. Unbelievable.
Tim cracks me up.
He's funny. The fourth round is when Inoue stepped on the gas. He threw 38 punches, and he ended the fight with the fight high 61. So that's the thing. Hey,
did you give Doheny round 3? I did.
I wasn't exactly scoring it. I was mostly, this is bad. When I start with my parlays, I had over 4.5 rounds parlayed with Pacheco KO, which Pacheco got the KO on Saturday night. And then I had the over 4.5. So in the third round, I was really staring at the clock. I was on clock watch. Just get me to that fourth. Get me through the fourth.
Not even watching the fight anymore. Just come on.
No, I was. I gave Doheny, probably one round early. Probably that third when he
it was the third round where he was most effective.
Right. He kind of gave different looks to Inoue, and I'm not gonna say tripped Inoue up, but it did give Inoue a little bit of hesitancy early. It did give him a little bit more time to figure it out. We kind of knew that heading in. That's what we talked about on last episode, that Doheny, this guy is a veteran. You know, he didn't put up the best fight against Inoue, but he did cause some resistance early on. But Inoue stepped on the gas in the sixth round, landed 50% of his punches in the sixth round. That's the thing with him, is like people are looking to nitpick him. That's what happens when you're at the top, right? And you do it with Canelo, we do it with Crawford, Not so much Usyk because he just can't be stopped. But you nitpick the greats, and especially Inoue, who there are still people out there that are just still not sold on him, strictly based off ignorance because they just don't know some of the names that he's fighting. But people will start to nitpick the Neary knockdown in the last fight. The fact that, you know, Inoue is starting to get hit a little bit more. I know that Bernardo was talking about his defense, but he still did get that tagged a few times here by Inoue. Excuse me, by Tohenny. He only had 29% of his total punches and almost 40% of his power shots. But at the end of the day, he's still a wrecking ball. He still punches with just extremely mean intentions. He's ferocious in there. Those body shots, he's just very accurate. He's accurate. He's ferocious. And he has that killer instinct to get 9 straight stoppages. So you can say what you want about the slippage of Inoue. There's a lot of featherweights out there. There's a lot of 122-pounders that are kind of licking their chops a little bit because he's on the north side of 30 years old, and he's the money guy in the division. But 9 straight stoppages is 9 straight stoppages. And those body shots were lethal. So just be careful if you're going to say that Inoue is losing a little bit of his fastball.
Yeah, the problem is the elevation that – that fans give to fighters. You call the guy the monster, you anoint him as this mythological person, and then you expect him to go up and wait and fight everybody all the time. It's always, oh, what's next? Move up to 26. Like, guys, he's human. He's fighting at 122 where he's undersized. He's a smaller guy. It's his fourth weight class, and he's still stopping all these guys.
Well, a lot of people that are just seeing him from 2020 on,
well,
they don't
know.
He had a whole damn career before that.
Yeah, I mean, I think what was he, world champion? How many fights did he have when he won his first world title?
I think it was
like under 10.
Six.
Yeah, it's crazy. For the length of this guy's career and how long he has been active and moving up in weight and fighting bigger guys with more experience, but he's still stopping them. I mean, granted, he's not mowing guys down and blowing them out with one punch KOs like he was at 118 and, you know, and 115, but he is human, and he's going to decline. He's 31 years old. You know, he says he wants to do 2 more years at this weight class. I always say, man, 33 is that magic number. There's a reason that number's in the Bible. 33 is when guys start to really start to dip. Inoue has got a couple years left. And I saw a vignette we put out on ESPN where he was being interviewed about what he's going to do next. And he was questioning his own ability to move up. I'd never heard him do that interview. So I think that's really indicative, and I think it shows too at 22. You're seeing these guys; they're just bigger people than him. And these fans who are knocking him for being human, it's crazy. You got to look at this guy's career in totality and understand that he is giving the fans what they want by fighting stiffer challenges at bigger weight classes.
Yeah, we might as well get into what's next because Bob Arum jumped into the ring.
Bob forcing that action, man. Forcing it.
Bob is in Japan. Just of course he's in Japan. 94 years old. And kind of laid out the next few fights for Naoya Inoue. So according to Bob Arum, he gets into the ring with Inoue after. Inoue is going to fight on Christmas Eve versus Sam Goodwin out of Australia. If he gets through that, we're looking at an April fight in Las Vegas with Junto Nakatani on the card as well. They're building towards a Nakatani Inoue showdown in Tokyo that will come sometime in 2025. So that's the next year and change for Naoya Inoue. He's going to stay at 122. He's going to take on some more mandatory. He's going to come to the United States with Nakatani on the card, and then they're going to build towards a Nakatani-Inoue showdown that belongs in the Tokyo Dome. Not, there were some rumblings that maybe it was going to go down in Las Vegas. Like that was the big Las Vegas fight. That makes no sense to put Nakatani versus Inoue. Nope. Put that in Tokyo Dome, sell that thing out. Biggest fight in Japan, and
Dan and I were going. We're going. If there's ever a time for us to go to Tokyo, it's that fight.
Nakatani versus Inoue in Tokyo Dome in the summer of 2025 or the fall of 2025. That's a nice
probably
little timeline.
Fall. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a nice timeline for
they
Inoue.
Might even
that's
push
like
that off to they might even push that off to like a New Year's Eve event.
Doing a Christmas Eve, they're doing a Christmas Eve event versus Sam Goodwin.
Yeah, that too. So that's
your family.
Fair.
Perfect. Wait, is that going to be Christmas Eve 6 a.m.? That's not going to be like Christmas Eve night. It's going to be the 24th at like 5 a.m. He's going to Eastern. He's going to
be Christmas Sam Eve Goodman. Morning.
Yes. Christmas morning would be crazy.
Christmas morning would be cool, opening presents and watching fights.
I don't think they'd do that because of the no fans would show up. But Christmas Eve morning, I'm down with that. Sam Goodman is definitely worthy.
How cool would that be, Dan, to go to a fight Christmas Eve morning? What a way to start the holiday.
The best fight of all time happened on Christmas. 1985. Rocky versus Drago.
The best the fight of all Union. Time. I'm like, what is the best fight of all time?
Yeah, Soviet Union. He skyped Rocky to freaking stop the Cold War on Christmas Day.
Stop the Cold War on Christmas Day. His gift to America.
There was a fight on Christmas Day a few years ago, from Newark on Fox, and there was one on New Year's Day, which I think is prime time to do a fight.
New Year's Day is perfect. I mean, the eyes are on that. Christmas Day, not so much. I don't want to watch a fight on Christmas Day.
Christmas night, there was one on Fox, and then they did that Luis Ortiz.
Can you imagine doing a weigh-in on Christmas Eve? That sucks.
Dude, I was talking to the crew. It sucks. Like, you think of you just waking up watching for you don't think about like the crew that gets
the people
arena,
working
like,
yeah
the day before that sets up the ring, sets up the lights, sets up the arena. That's on Christmas Eve, which is not easy. I think they pay double, but still. I believe Christmas New Year's Day card was Andy Ruiz versus what's his name, the big Cuban.
Luis Ortiz.
Yeah, Andy Ruiz definitely fought on Christmas on New Year's Day, which I thought was great, because they put it on like early afternoon. It was in Miami. Was it Christmas Eve? No, I don't know where we're going. We're veering off, and I'm not 100% prepared to talk about that. But
let's right the ship. Come on.
Let's right the ship. Sam Goodman versus Inoue, Christmas Eve. Like that fight. Goodman is a good operator. He throws a lot of punches. He's probably not going to win, but still be a fun fight to watch with Inoue. April, Vegas. They're bringing. Everyone's always asked, "When is this guy going to come back to New York?"
Dan, I would pump the brakes on that. We'll see. I know. Listen, Bob likes to push the action, push the limit, push the envelope. Inoue doesn't have to do that. Even if Bob says it, I'm telling you, he does not have to fight Vegas if he doesn't want to.
It's not like we're not saying have a residency. We're not saying come here and stay in Vegas. But it's one fight. If you think about it, it makes sense.
It makes total sense. April. Absolutely. You introduce him to the American fan base. You get people to come out over here. Get people excited. Nakatani's on the undercard. Makes total sense. I understand where Bob's going, but I don't know, man. I don't know.
Pay him more.
He's going to have to.
Obviously, pay.
Bob's going to really have to come out of pocket for that fight.
He should, because it's time to bring this guy back to the United States. He has fought in the U.S. before.
But
bring him back.
Can Bob afford to pay him that much more? The guy is getting paid a ton in Japan. You're going to pay him even more than his high ticket item number that ticket number in terms of what he's making out there, and then you're going to bring him here, pay him more. You're going to ship all that. That's a big.
I did think about it today. They're going to have to come up with someone's going to have to make up the difference, whether it's sponsorships or it's him doing something here in the U.S. There has to be something. When they presented this to him, they had to have all this prepared. Which
got to sweeten the deal, baby. Got to sweeten that deal.
Yeah, this isn't their first rodeo. IRM and the top rank guys going to Inoue and his team and saying this is the benefits of fighting in Vegas in April with Nakatani on the card. You know, here's what we'll make. We'll pay you extra. We'll we'll give you some buffet tickets at the MGM. Maybe that's it. Free parking. You don't have to take any Ubers.
Bob is so awesome, though. I love the way he plants these seeds. He did that to me, and when I beat Provonikov, he was if press conference. First thing he says, like, I want to see that kid against Pacquiao, and then it's like off to the races. And of course, I mean, I had no choice, but Inoue does. But I just love how Bob is such a marketing genius that he's in the ring saying that.
That's great.
Doheny didn't even get out of the ring yet, and he's
limping. He was halfway up the. They literally had a shot of Inoue. Doheny limping his way back. Poor guy, limping his way.
Bob was actually moving better than Doheny at that point. Bob's 94 years old. He was hopping through the ropes. Giddy as a schoolgirl.
Because I'm thinking about the episode. I'm thinking about what we're going to talk about. We're just going to speculate. Are we just going to speculate on what Inoue is going to do next? But Bob gets.
Or is Bob just going to lay it out for the next 18 months?
Bob, perfect. Gets in the ring and gives me some bullet points. And thank you, Mr. Aram.
He had a PowerPoint presentation ready, but they didn't have the projector set up.
Love that. But do you like that? I like this plan.
I love it.
If it all goes true, this is a very, very good plan. That's three more fights for Inoue at 122 pounds, because the speculation was going wild with him fighting in the U.S. Everyone, of course, this is going to be Gervonta Davis. It's going to be Bruce Carrington. It's going to be Robesi Ramirez. It's going to be Angelo Leo. It's going to be any of the featherweights.
Gervonta Davis never happens. Never, never happens, especially now. And I think, honestly, I'll tell you this, Dan. I think the Venato fight made a lot of sense. I think it was an interesting fight. But now that Venato got beat, I don't see a reason truly for Inoue to move up to 26. Because Venato, you know, if he had gotten past Leo, I think that fight would have made sense. Because Venato then kind of puts himself a little bit, you know, head above everyone else in the division. Because there's no star in that division yet. There's no like breakout guy. But Venato was the guy who had the title for the longest. And when you have a division when the belt is getting overturned over and over and over again, consistency matters. And Venato was becoming that guy. But now that he lost, and especially the way he lost, and apparently he had suffered a brain bleed in that fight, he's not going to be back for a while, if ever. And once I saw that interview where Inoue was essentially saying he didn't know if he could do it, go up to 26, that I don't think there's work to be done there, and there's plenty to do at 22.
Chris, you're pouring cold water on a lot of things right now.
Is it
the sleep deprivation? Is it the Vegas?
I get real. I get real when I'm tired, man.
Is it the lack of fresh air in Vegas? Because you don't think it's a lock that Inoue fights in Vegas, and you don't think he's moved to 126? Interesting, because everyone's saying it's a foregone conclusion that he's going to 126. They thought before Aram and Lance Buckmeyer reported that the Nishinokitani plan, that it's not, the next three fights will not be at 126. The speculation was running wild.
When he himself says, I'm going to spend two more years at 22, and when he himself says, yeah, I don't know if it's realistic, you know, physically, if I can do it to go to 26. Those two points, when I hear that, out of the man's mouth. So now you're going to be 33 years old, and now you're going to move into your fifth weight class? I don't see it.
Interesting.
And be successful.
That changes everything. It changes a lot. And it makes the fighters at 126 think about things. Makes the fighters at 118 think about things. It makes a Bam Rodriguez fight seem like more likely.
You
have that one.
Smaller guys. Smaller guys coming up.
Smaller guys.
I think he deserves that. I think he deserves to stay where he's at and have guys come to him. But honestly, though, Bob Arum and Top Rank, in their perfect world, Nakatani wins. And they get a rematch. They get a rubber match, whatever. But the Nakatani takes over the mantle.
Well, he's
that's
really good. Like Nakatani,
he's awesome.
Every chance to win that fight.
Yes, like, absolutely.
I would love to see the odds on a Nakatani Inoue fight. Like I would not. It's not. You're not going to have your plus whatever your minus 1,000.
That's gonna be a super fun fight to break down leading up to it. We have to break out some videos for that one, Dan.
Absolutely.
We have to get in the ring.
Oh shit! Haven't gotten the ring in a while.
It's been a minute.
Yeah, so that's what we know what Inoue is doing for sure. Or this is the soft plan. The 126 is still up in the air. The Gervonta Davis fight, which they're
up in smoke.
Fans love to talk about. It's the beauty of boxing. It's these dream matchups. It's putting two ferocious punchers in the ring. A lot of fans out there, casual fans, see two smaller guys. Ah, whatever. Just throw them in there. You know, 130. 126, whatever. Just put him in there.
Did he fight Canelo yet? Has Inoue fought Canelo? I love when casual fans.
Jalen Rose asked for that one time.
Put stuff out.
Asked for that.
Yeah, awesome.
Stephen A. Smith would want to see Inoue. Inoue's good. But when is he going to fight Canelo?
Brilliant.
Next up on First Take.
I want to see Stephen A. Smith box Shaquille O'Neal. That's what I want.
That would be nice. Tank Inoue. If it ever does happen, I see that well in the future of like when Inoue is like old and Tank.
And they're both 45.
Well, they're both the same age, which is around the same age, which is nuts. Inoue's 31, Tank is 30.
Yeah, but Inoue's been fighting top flight pros for 10 years.
Yeah, I know. Those that don't know, now they do know. Gervonta Davis. 31. He's 31. Deron Davis is 29, and Inoue is 31. Yeah, that's just like the casual fan. That's like their dream fight. That's like I'm not going to give Inoue any props until he fights Gervonta Davis. You know, Gervonta Davis hasn't like shot it down. He's very complimentary of Inoue. He really loves Inoue. I think a lot of fans are. I think a lot of fighters, I should say. I think a lot of fighters like Inoue and Davis. You know, I've talked to a lot of fighters, and they have a lot of respect for both guys. I mean,
Inoue is your favorite fighter's favorite fighter. That's realistic. And I think it's a great way. I forgot who said it. It was someone interviewed. But for me, it's like if you're making a video game character of a boxer, and you have like unlimited points, you know, like with the power rating and the speed and all that. It's in a way. He's got everything. Yeah. He does it all.
He looks like an action figure too.
He does look like an action figure.
So cool.
He's like a Dragon Ball Z character. He's the guy is he's awesome. And I don't know, Dan, it's really exciting when he fights. Like I'm very, very excited. I get it. There's an aura around him. There is a superstar status to him. Every minute of every round, every second of every round, I'm like on the edge of my seat. He is must watch.
Right. You want to see what he's going to do. You want to see if he can continue the KO streak, 9 streak. You want to see if there, you know, there are any starting to any weaknesses you're looking for.
But also, there's a vulnerability to him now. Yeah. At this weight class, and you're seeing guys like Doheny who are so big and can punch, and you're like, oh, he could get hit. He could get rocked. It's very interesting.
Yeah, so he moves on with another victory, a nice little plan for him to defend those titles before what could be a massive showdown with Junto Nakatani sometime in 2025 in Tokyo. Undercard was fun, too. Moment of silence for our man Ismael Barroso. All right, moment of silence over. He loses ninth round stoppage. I did not see it. It was not part of the ESPN Plus offering, but you did call it. How did our guy look? I heard he had some. He put up a little bit of a fight towards the end, but ultimately was just outgunned by Hiroka.
And it wasn't so much he was outgunned; he was outclassed. Hiroka fought a very disciplined fight. I didn't know he had that in him. He was very, very disciplined. He worked behind the southpaw jab, very sharp. Couldn't miss with the jab all night long, and was building off that. Took no chances. Was not letting though that vaunted power of Barroso make a difference, because you know Barroso can punch, man. He still can at 41 years old. He was throwing some heat at certain times, but Hiroka stayed long. He's super long, super tall for the weight class. He just kept Barroso on the end of his jab for the first like 6 rounds. Started to feel himself a little bit, and then got cracked one round, 2 times. Got a little cut under his eye, got hit in the jaw, came back to the corner. His dad reamed him out, and he went back out there and then just went back to being smart, sticking the jab. And he was looking to land the overhand left all night. Finally did rock Barroso, and then Hiroka normally is a very active guy, two-fisted guy, big puncher, gets stoppages, and we saw that again. So he was boxer. Then when he had the opportunity, he went back to what he normally does, unloaded, and put Barroso down twice, and the corner stepped in and was like, all right, that's enough, which was a good call. He was getting hurt, and Hiroka was really coming on. He had tenderized, I said on air, he was tenderizing the meat with the jab all night long, and then eventually just really dropped that mallet and put a beating on Barroso.
Did
at the end.
You say that on the air?
Yeah. Nice. Tenderizing the meat.
That's great. Yep. And drop the mallet?
And drop the mallet.
Damn. That's like Joe Tess level.
Did you I don't see have the Joe energy Tess? Of Joe Tess.
Did you see Joe Tess made his WWE Monday Night
Raw? Oh, no, I didn't.
It's all over Twitter. That's awesome. It's all over Instagram. Awesome. He's now the voice of Monday Night Raw. He's a loyal listener of this show, and he's a great friend of ours. Congrats, Joe. That was really cool. He has the perfect voice and the perfect energy for WWE.
Cadence, energy, everything.
And you know what's really hard is to win over those WWE fans. They are very used to a specific type of commentator. You know, it seems like they go through these commentators like wild, looking for the next Jim Ross from back in our day in the Attitude Era. But it seems like the fans like him. And it's just another notch in the belt of Joe Tess, you know, calling college football, calling boxing at a high level, and now WWE.
You think I'm busy. Joe Tess is the busiest man in sports.
Good God. I was thinking about his travel schedule.
I talked to him about it. It's wild. It's wild.
He's doing it. It's the middle of football. Like, not the middle. It's the beginning of college football season. I'm pretty sure he did a game. I was at a barbecue this weekend, and I saw him.
Yeah, I watched him. I watched him last week. I was in the Keys. I was in Key West and watching Saturday afternoon football. And
yeah, we're
Joe
like
Tess.
2 weeks into the
college. I texted him. I was like, I'm listening to Joe Tess right now.
That's amazing. He probably does the best ESPN football games, college football of the week on Saturday. And then he flies to wherever Raw is Sunday.
Well, Dan, you mentioned how he's been invited by the WWE fan base, which is tough. The thing about Tess is, whether you know it's him or not, he has a very distinctive voice that you've heard before. There's a lot of crossover with NFL and WWE fans. They're used to that guy's voice, whether you know it's him or not. Yeah. Now you know him. It's like, oh, this is that guy that does college football. I know this voice. That's awesome. I think it's much more inviting for them to be like, oh, this guy's good. He's earned it. He could be here.
Joe Tess, what a guy.
Joe Tess, he's the man.
Hopefully that doesn't mean we see less of him doing boxing, because that would be.
I think boxing fans. I think that's a passion project for Joe. He loves boxing. I don't know. But only he can answer.
You better
that.
Not leave boxing, Joe. I'll text him later. You better not be leaving box. Great call on the WWE. Been up. He was in the ring and stuff. It was pretty cool.
That's so cool. But that's the thing. When you're an announcer for the WWE, you're a character. You're now a character
like Grisham,
in
right?
Yeah, you're a character in the storyline.
Grisham got like whatever move. I forgot.
When he get DDT'd or choke slam.
I stopped watching when you're supposed to stop watching. Like I stopped watching wrestling when I was like 13 when I discovered girls and like alcohol. But that's when Grisham came in. I think Grisham was hired right after the Attitude Era. So like he'll post stuff and I'll see things of him getting like I think Randy
choke
Orton
slammed.
Did a finishing move to him or something, like where he was like part of skits and stuff. I missed out on the Grisham era.
Well, Grisham is like a big athletic guy. Like he fits in. Like I could see him getting slammed through a table or something and being okay with that. But you're not doing that to Taz. You're not doing that to Taz.
No. I love talking to Grisham about Vince McMahon. Vince McMahon obviously is not in the picture anymore. He's disgraced. But he would be in the ear of Grisham during Monday Night Raw, being like, well, "You suck. What are you saying right now?" Like,
he is a notorious. Vince is a notorious micromanager. Apparently,
yeah,
he's like
the ear
he's
of
up
his
everyone's
commentators.
Ass.
Yeah, exactly. He's in the ear of the commentators, which I could never do. I mean, when I call fights and I have to produce them right here, like
that's stressful as hell.
Yeah, I hear them when they're counting me down or they're talking. Say, hey, this is a highlight. This is coming up next, or this replay from the last round. I couldn't imagine them critiquing me live. That would be in my head so much. So, Grisham, you're
well.
A lot
so
tougher than
this.
Me.
You'll love this. So when I've done the ESPN telecast, like they're intense. There's a lot going on in your ear, and there's a lot to think about, and there's a lot of moving parts. It's a really difficult gig. But I remember when I first started doing commentating, one of my first jobs, the great Marty Corwin over at Top Rank, who I worked with last night in the truck. Marty's the best. Been around forever. And he was telling me, he goes, no matter what I'm saying in your ear, finish your thought. If I'm telling you to shut the fuck up, finish your thought. And that stuck with me forever. Like,
it's really
that,
hard.
And
it's the first time you hear that
very
voice,
hard.
You stop talking.
Oh, you stop talking. Yeah. You're trying to, because you have to try and you're listening to someone. And it's very difficult to listen to someone, especially when you're straining, when you're hearing multiple streams of sound. So, yeah, people at home, just what we're doing on the mic is not so easy on Fight Night. Trust me.
I remember one of the first things I was doing, like, they were like teaching me the ropes, like just showing me how to do it. I was doing play-by-play, and the guy started counting me down to go to commercial. It's like 10.
That's hard.
And I'm trying to finish my thought, and I just stopped talking dead on the spot. And the guy goes, talk! What are you doing? Like,
keep there's talking. Four more I, seconds. Keep talking.
So then I pick up my train of thought, and then I like throw it to break, and there was still like 4 seconds left. The guy got to four, and I was like, and we'll be back after this. He's like, all right, you butchered that one pretty good. So it's really hard.
You butchered that one
on the air.
Kid.
I wasn't even on the air. I was like practicing. It was like a rehearsal. But he's like, when you hear that voice, you get really, really like shook.
You butchered that one pretty good, kid.
Yeah, he got me good on that one. That guy was brutal to me. But that's how you learn. That's how you learn. Consummate professional that I am now. And you might be seeing me on the Canelo broadcast. I have more details on that next week. Yeah, baby. So that was the card over in Japan. A good one highlighted by Inoue. Love a little Tuesday morning post Labor Day blues.
Boxing, yeah, I do too. Normally when I'm watching it in my backyard, not when I'm actually up in the middle of the night calling fights, but whatever is what it
wild.
Is.
Let's get to some like other stuff that happened in boxing since we last spoke to you guys. Boots versus Brian Norman, dead in the water. Very frustrating. Just annoying. The worst part of boxing reared its ugly head here is the negotiations. According to Eddie Hearn, who will, if you know Eddie Hearn, he just can't deny an interview. He'll do an interview with literally anyone. He's always on the road. He's always has the media with him. So he's always going to be on the air and he's always going to be able to control the narrative. And I kind of believe him in this case. He said that he offered Norman X amount of money. Went to Norman. They asked for more. He up increased the offer. Increased the offer again. So it got to like $1.5 million. And in Boots, Norman's last fight, he was reportedly paid somewhere around $100,000. So do the math. It is exponentially more money that Brian Norman was getting to fight Boots. But the Norman side had crazy demands. This is all according to Eddie Hearn. Demands of, what about the managerial fees? What about Top Rank's fee? We don't want to fight in Philly. It's not fair. We want to fight in Vegas. Pretty much holding that belt hostage, because as we all know, Boots wants that belt. He wants to unify. He's trying desperately to unify with any of the other champions. Fight's dead because Brian Norman is now fighting on November 8th on the undercard of Keyshawn Davis. So he went from potentially fighting in the main event, unification against Boots, to now you're fighting on an undercard.
And he ain't making $1.5 million, I'll tell you that much.
You're not making $1.5 million. They could maybe revisit it. And I'm trying to sympathize a little bit with Brian Norman's side of things. Like, it's hard to. A lot of these details, there's a lot missing in a lot of the details because you're just listening to one side of it, Eddie Hearn, the mouthpiece. But, you know, a lot of it has to be true. Like, he turned down the fight, and it was a lot of money. We know that it's more than 100K. We don't know exactly how much it was, but for us, what do we as fans have to? We're dealt with just not seeing a fight at 147. A decent fight. This isn't Hagler Hearns. Like, the fact that they can't even negotiate a fight of this level is the most annoying part of boxing.
I understand where Norman's coming from. He wants to defend his title, which he has not won in the ring. Let's get that straight. He has not won his title in the ring. He was elevated via email from the fight with Santheon because Crawford relinquished the title. So the guy has not won a title fight yet. So in his mind, he may think, and I think a lot of fighters think like this, especially if you're elevated, you didn't win the fight in the ring. You didn't win the belt in the ring. You didn't have that in the new when they bring the belt over your shoulder. Fighters want that. If he goes right into a fight with Boots and Boots beats him, which he almost definitely will, he never won a title fight. He never won that title in the ring. He never got that experience to have that belt offered to him. Now, you know, he has a defense. He gets to go out there. Hopefully he wins so he can keep on. He can hold on to that meal ticket, which is what it is. Guys, I understand. A title is not just, I'm a world champion. I have a title belt. I'm going down in history. I'm a champion forever. It's also a meal ticket. It's money. That next fight, your dollar
bargaining chip,
your potential goes way up. Your earning potential goes way up. And yes, it's a bargaining chip, and it's going to be a big bargaining chip for the Ennis unification or any kind of unification. So I can understand from a fighter's perspective why Brian Norman would want to have a defense first.
Yeah.
Which isn't really a defense. It's winning the title.
Right. That's
as far as I'm concerned.
Where I was, it was just so much onslaught on Norman's side, like towards Norman on Twitter, as people that I respect in the boxing business, saying things, you know, crazy things about Norman, calling him this, that, and the other. Just trying to think about it from his standpoint. They're taking a calculated risk right now.
Yes, $1.5 million, very risky.
Very risky. $1.5 million, apparently not enough for them. So I'll go and
Brian Norman was on his way to losing to Boca Chica on air, and the fight got stopped on a head clash. So depending on who they pick for their defense, this is a huge risk.
Already. They have the opponent. I'll find it right now. But he's taking a big-time risk, Brian Norman. It's a calculated risk, him and his team. $1.5 million, not enough for him. So now he'll go fight on the undercard and make whatever, how much. He's fighting Derek Cuevas.
I know the name.
My guess is he's going to be a massive favorite, Brian Norman. I mean, they're not going to.
Yeah. What's the guy's record?
I don't have it in front of me. I just have. Is it on BoxRec already? Sometimes they do that. No.
Yeah.
Brian Cuevas. Let's see.
Brian Cuevas? No. Derek
Cuevas. Brian Norman.
Derek, yeah.
I'm trying to do two things at once here. Multitasking. Derek Cuevas? Nothing's coming up on BoxRec. I don't know his record. Calculated risk. They think they can go back to the drawing board. They think Team Norman can go back to the negotiating table.
I don't know who this is.
Be a little more desperate. Boots' team will be more desperate to make the fight, and then they'll get more money out of it.
It's not Boots' team. They're not desperate. It's Eddie. And it's how much he wants to pay and how much he's willing to pay. And it's going to depend also. So there's another thing, Dan. Like, how good does Brian Norman look in the fight? Because if he doesn't look good, it's going to be that much harder to negotiate a higher purse. And then that 1.5 that you turned down is now turned into 1.1. Because, well, hey, listen.
How about this? The Karen whatever, Chukzinian
Chugazian, yeah,
won the purse bid for the IBF. And that's supposed to be, for the IBF title, it's supposed to be Boots versus Karen 2. And that's the purse bid just got won by Karen's promoter, not Matchroom. So they can go ahead and make that fight. Or Boots has to vacate. So I don't know what Norman's team is thinking now, because if Boots leaves the division, which I think he should, at this point because no one wants to make fights with him. Now you have Norman. You don't have any fight with Boots. He's out of the division. It's okay. You can go unify with Stanionis. Good fight. Not a big money fight. Not getting one.
Yeah, and good luck beating Stanionis. He's another one. He's a stud.
Good luck getting paid, too. Or yeah, that's and the other champions. So Barrios is a very hard fight.
Yes, very hard fight.
He's not Boots. No one's offering you $1.5 million to fight Barrios or Stanionis, is my point. So it's a very risky move by Brian Norman. I think Boots should move up. Not because I don't want to see him fight at 147. None of these guys are serious about fighting him. Like Stanionis is with the other with PBC. Barrios is flirting with Manny Pacquiao. And Boots is, and Norman is pricing himself out or doing whatever hard tactics.
Dan, I disagree. I think he needs to stay and just
so fight
wait.
Karen for the second time.
I mean, it's very unfortunate, but it's unfortunate. But like you said, if you can't get the unification and the other guys are tied up, just fight Karen again. I mean, it sucks that he lost the purse because that means that the purse is going to be smaller. But it's a defense. You got the guy beat already. See if you can stop him this time, and then move on to the next step. Because listen, does that Pacquiao Barrios fight definitely happen? No. Does Stanionis, I think, would fight Boots next. But again, promotional,
yeah, I think so too.
Situations, you know, and Eddie does work with everybody. He will make fights. That's one thing I do really like about Eddie. He's willing to make fights. He's a guy who he doesn't kill deals. He'll make a fight. So. That's possible. Brian Norman is going to he's basically just waiting it out to try and make more money. But if they both fight recently, you know, he's fighting in November. Boots fights in November against Karen. And then it's all right, buddy, you can't run anymore. We both just fought. We're going to be fighting. We're going to be ready to fight again around the same time. So let's go. What are we talking about? Let's make it happen and just do full court press on Brian Norman Jr. While you're waiting out the Mario Barrios Pacquiao situation.
Well, then wow. In that case, Norman made a pretty good decision.
It potentially, if he wins, you know, he loses, he's asked out.
Yeah, they're banking on Norman looking good, winning. The other fight's not coming to fruition, and then Boots not going to 154. That's a lot of things.
A lot of moving parts.
Lastly, did you see this? Teofimo Lopez training with Canelo.
Yeah,
team.
Cool.
Love that.
Very cool.
I got legitimately jacked up when I saw that.
But Dan, is he training with them or was it a photo op, basically?
Good question.
Essentially a long photo op.
So he's at the Canelo and Teofimo have always been friendly. Like Canelo, what did Canelo say recently to Crawford? Oh, he said to Crawford, fight Teofimo first, then I'll fight you, Crawford. Which is a crazy thing to say. Like, where did that come from? Well, now it turns out that maybe they're gym mates or maybe they are working together.
But well, real recognize real. I mean, the talent there is there. Well, there's no questioning Teofimo's talent.
They do fight very similar. Low maybe. Output. Like Canelo, maybe of like 5 years ago or even.
Deeper. I don't know. I don't see that. Teofimo's athleticism is way higher than Canelo.
Yeah,
Canelo's
I agree.
Not that.
In terms of like explosiveness, one punch explosiveness, like hone in.
You're going by the. You're being numbers, Dan. You're going by the numbers. By the numbers, yeah. But not in terms of their style.
They kind of are mimic each other in terms of their volume now and how they fight. But yes, Teofimo is way more explosive.
Danny Numbers. Why don't I call you that? Danny Numbers.
Because I'm a full numbers guy. Bobby Numbers, my dad.
Bobby Numbers is but that's Bobby Numbers Senior. You're Danny Numbers.
Danny Numbers. he posted something else. He posted the original video, which was like, all right, maybe he's just stopping by the gym. Maybe he's just you know, linking up with Canelo, soaking up some of Canelo's wisdom, yada, yada, yada. But then he posted something yesterday saying, like, with his dad tagged in it as well, that, like, they're all teaming together. Canelo team, Teofimo Lopez Sr. Like, his dad is in the mix, too. I think Eddie Reynoso, I don't know. Like, I couldn't hit up anyone. I don't know who to even contact to get a confirmation on it. But it seems like it's more than just a flyby visit. Will that mean that Eddie Reynoso is the lead trainer and his dad's taking a back seat, which would be a massive development, which I don't think will ever happen? Does it mean
Eddie Reynoso is
helping?
Teofimo has had other guys in the corner alongside his dad. He used to have our guy Joey Gamache, which was fantastic. And I talked to Joey about the training with Teofimo back then, and Joey was like, he's a phenomenal talent. Phenomenal talent. And I asked him, what do you guys are working on? He goes, we just work on defense. And that's when Teofimo was really dialed in. I don't know why Joey isn't still part of the team, but to your point, Dan, like a lot of the things that Canelo does in terms of, you know, especially the post Floyd Mayweather Canelo, who became very defensive, great upper body movement, slip and rip, a lot of countering. That's stuff that Teofimo does intuitively, and now you're drilling that. It's a good mesh. I like it.
I want to see where it progresses. I expect Teofimo to be,
if it progresses,
I expect Teofimo to be at the fight next week, Canelo week. I expect him to do some interviews, and I expect him to get asked about it quite a lot. And then, you know, we'll figure it out after that. But I love it. I love it. You know, that's been the one thing everyone's been asking for, to bring someone else in. It's a father and son is the toughest thing bond to break in boxing. I'm not saying his dad's doing a horrible job, but, like, you know, if you could bring in someone like Eddie Reynoso, who's world renowned, and it's a different perspective, which is everything. Interesting things. That's it for us this week. We'll come back at the end of the week with another episode when Chris is in his humble abode. I will be in Orlando covering MVP Prospects 8. Heading
when?
Out there tomorrow.
Oh, nice. Coming down to the sunshine state.
Yes, last time I was there, I was quite ill. This guy had COVID.
You were supposed to come by the house and hang out with me and the pup. And then you
10 days in Vegas. 10 days in Florida in the middle of the summer.
8 of them spent sick.
Yeah, that was horrible. But I'm going back Orlando this week. Friday night on DAZN. Me, Nonito Donaire, and Wade Plemp calling MVP Prospects 8 main event. Kevin Brown, who's a good-looking Cuban fighter. Of course, John Bauza, formerly of Top Rank.
Nice. John Bauza's good. Event. He's a down Florida guy from down here. I don't know if he's from down here, but he trained down here. He knows a lot of people from down here. Send my best to the Hall of Famer, the Filipino legend.
I'm not sure. I might figure out how to get him on the podcast.
Why not? Be great.
Got to figure out the logistics of it. If we can get him, like me and him in the room with the microphone, you on on the Zoom, and we just chop it up. If it doesn't work, me and you will do it, and then maybe I'll talk to Nonito at the end of the show. I've got to figure it out. I want to get him on the show because he has a lot of wisdom, and he's very tuned in. He really wants to fight Chocolatito. He really wants to fight again. He'll take his shirt off at the pool bar and the pool restaurant every trip. And just
nice.
And he'll flex, and he'll give me words of wisdom. Love. It's just amazing. Out of nowhere, I'm just working with Nonito Donaire. I text with him. So that's the coolest part of boxing. It's just all of a sudden, I'm friends with Nonito Donaire.
Nonito's one of the coolest, realest dudes in this sport. So I got a quick story before we go. Nonito and I are at a wedding in Colombia for a mutual friend of ours. And Nonito likes to have fun. I like to have fun. You know that, Dan. I like to have fun. So after the wedding, we go to the streets of Colombia and we're hanging out. You know, we're bar hopping a little bit. We're chatting about fights. We're going over stuff. And, you know, I got to ask him about that left hook. You know, I got to ask him now, because that thing is a thing of beauty. It's a nightmare, but it's a thing
it's
of beauty.
It's like carrying a gun. He was literally carrying.
Yeah,
a gun.
He's got a weapon. He should have to have a license for that left hook to walk around the streets. So it's like 3 a.m. in Colombia and in Medellin, and me and Donaire are squaring up to practice left hook technique. Dodging cars because they drive like maniacs down there, and we're literally like in the street, like working on left hooks, like bang. It was so funny. 3 a.m. in Medellin, Colombia.
Does not surprise me at all, because he'll do that at the pool in Orlando. He'll do it anywhere.
Shirtless at the pool, at the bar.
He's training,
no problem.
He's training guys. Like, yeah, he's awesome. All right, so we'll see you later on in the week, maybe with Donaire, maybe not. Enjoy safe travels back, Chris. Check yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Stay out of those DMs. Good night.
Feel the rush. Live thoroughbred racing is happening now at Laurel Park, the Players Track. Every Friday through Sunday, the gates open at 11 a.m. and the action starts at noon. Free admission, fast-paced racing, and real wagering excitement from start to finish. Pick your horses, place your bets, chase the win. From live racing and simulcast action to great food, special events, and nonstop sports viewing, Laurel Park is where the action lives. Come, win, play. Visit LaurelPark.com.